This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
I got a picture of
America is going to be a little bit more upbeat than usual, which is weird because I'm a pretty upbeat guy. We talk about serious issues, but I'm pretty upbeat about them. You may be kind of depressed over the results of the election from Tuesday. I completely understand that. Conservatives got, I wouldn't say completely trounced, but mostly trounced. There were some good down ballot things that happened in Kentucky. Pretty much Beshear won Kentucky, the Democrat. But that's it, just the governor, and then every other issue was won by Republicans. Stuff like that did happen. Now I'm not going to sit here and try to sort of gloss over the losses. The losses happened, and as I've said before, elections are the best barometer of elections. I watch polls like crazy. I look at data, but I get the poll guy thing a lot. But really what I'm looking at is predictive data, and some of that is elections, some of that is registrations, voter registrations, some of that is what's happening in key states, and then some of that is polling. I talk about all of it. What I did this week is on Tuesday, I started a new tradition. I'm going to do this every election, I think, now, because it's very, very fun, and it keeps me accountable as a self-professed data guy. I watched all the data, and I always do this. It's not as if I just do it going into elections. I'm always watching this because I want to know how things are in America. How are people feeling about these topics, these hot button issues usually? And how are people going to vote on those topics? So I recorded myself giving all of my predictions for the top four races. I actually was thinking about six, but I did the top four because I didn't know if people would care about the Mississippi governor as much or the legalization of pot in Ohio. If I would have said those, I would have gotten those correctly. But here, I went ahead and made a Today in Time Travel audio piece out of what I recorded on Tuesday. So normally we go Today in Time Travel when we do this segment, which is pretty infrequent, actually. And it goes back to, okay, this time last year or this time 5 years ago. Well, this is just a today in time travel to Tuesday. Here's me talking about my predictions for the election, which has now happened. Tell me if you think I did well.
Today in time travel.
All right, I was going to use my old-timey radio voice for this whole segment, but that would be annoying after 2 minutes. I will try to keep this thing to 2 minutes, though, and just use the old-timey radio filter. So let me start with Kentucky. This is going to be a tough one to call based on the polls. And, of course, I'm saying this right now, recorded on Tuesday, so that I can be on the record. That right now, Andy Beshear, the Democrat, should win that race based on the polling. The problem is, and here's what polls do. Here's what they like to do a lot. Within the last week, right before the election, they tighten them. That keeps their credibility because they can say, well, yes, it did say this, but then right before it, I said this. So they shape a narrative the whole time. Then all of a sudden, right before it, oh, it's very, very, very tight. So Emerson, in particular, at the beginning of October, had Beshear, the Democrat, up by 16. And as of last week, they had Cameron up by one. That is a 17-point flip. So this is really hard to predict. And the other thing about these is that there are very few polls. We have just Emerson and Data for Progress, which is a Democrat poll. Like, that's their job, is to do Democrat polling. That's it. I mean, that's pretty much all you have. And you have a right-leaning poll called Signal that's a Republican poll. That's it. So this is really hard to read the polls on this, but if you want to just make a generalization, you're going to say Beshear, the Democrat, will still win that one just based on the momentum, which seemed to be shifting right before the election if you look at the polls. Now, the other ones are very, very even more difficult and more specific because in Virginia, you're talking about such small elections that you really don't have polls, and if you do, you have one poll from a more local source like a ABC 12 or something in Richmond, you know, whatever. So that you just don't have much. So I'm telling you just my gut. I think Republicans will lose the House barely and not gain back the Senate. As in, they'll lose a couple seats overall. And this is just my gut prediction, okay? With the Ohio ballot measure, I can go into this in greater detail, but right now, just for prediction purposes and to keep this short, I'm going to say that people will vote for abortion in Ohio. There you go.
Wow. Wiggins America.
So there's the top four that I gave on Tuesday so that I could not shape the narrative. That I recorded that so that it is what it is, and I can't change it now. And if I had gotten any wrong, I had gotten any wrong. But guess what? I didn't. I didn't get any of those wrong. The top four were the Kentucky governor, Democrat. The House of Representatives, House of Delegates, they call it in Virginia, gained a couple seats. That's exactly what happened. They kept the Senate. Democrats did. That's what I said. And then the abortion measure is the one that I was the most sure would pass, and it did. So you might be saying, well, Ryan, you just picked a full Democrat ticket. Well, I also picked, I mean, maybe not in that audio, but I also did pick the Mississippi governor to retain his seat. That was Republican. And the weed legalization, which is neither Republican nor Democrat, to happen in Ohio. So there you go. I'm actually 6-for-6. But in that audio, 4-for-4. And so you may hear that and you go, well, great. Good job, Ryan. You picked a bunch of Democrats and they won. Well, yeah. I did, but I'm telling you now that these are passed, I'm watching the data, I'm watching polling, I'm watching registration, I'm watching all these things happen, and I'm looking at 2024. So if you trust me now, based on those predictions, then let's look at 24. I do believe that it's going to be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. I am among the extreme minority in politics, in political talk radio. I think even at this station, I'm among the minority that think it's actually going to be Trump versus Biden. Now, people are coming, and I've been saying this for a long time, people are coming around to the idea that it's going to be Donald Trump, just based on his sheer slaughter in the polls. He is way ahead of everybody. So I stand by that, and I have said that for a long time. But Biden, people are still really concerned that they don't think he's going to be the nominee. I do. So the polls that show anybody versus Biden right now, Let's go back to the New York Times Siena one from earlier this week, which got a lot of attention before the Tuesday election. Every single swing state except for Wisconsin, they have Trump winning. But here's the thing. They don't just have Trump winning. They have any candidate beating Biden and any candidate beating Harris. So regardless of if it's one of those two, whether you get Trump, DeSantis, Haley, that's the three main ones they did. Every single swing state, which would be Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, all of those except for Wisconsin, all went for the Republican. And you say, well, that's one poll, Ryan. That's just one poll. I didn't come here to hear about the one poll of the week. Well, there's multiple of the week, and they're all moving that way, and that's my point, is that as I look at all this data, the momentum right now is clearly in Trump's corner, and it's moving further and further. You know, I've been saying, oh, this election's actually much closer than people are talking about. People are saying, oh, we want somebody who's going to win. Donald Trump is not a winner. Back when they were saying that and saying, well, DeSantis is probably the guy. He's polling better. That's no longer the case. In fact, it has swung so far to now the point that it's rare that you see swing states that are going Biden if you just do Biden-Trump. Now you add RFK in, you add Cornel West, and we can talk about that separately. But my point is, overall, the momentum right now is in Trump's favor. Are they shaping this to try to get Biden out of the race? It's possible, but not every poll would be doing that. Would be massive collusion on their part. And a lot of these polls are not necessarily Democrat run. You know, they might be media involved, but they're not all Democrats. Some of them are Republican. Some of them are nonpartisan. So you'd have to have this massive effort to really shape the narrative like that. And they're all showing this. So you go, Ryan, I didn't come here to hear about one poll. You convinced me that you can predict elections. I don't always get 100%, but this year I did. You convinced me that you're good at predicting. Well, thank you for saying that, first of all. I really appreciate that. I'm glad you're in my corner. And I understand now that I've convinced you of that, that you want to hear predictions. Well, okay, here's the predictions. One, Democrats are going to make abortion the only issue going into 2024. Why? Because they win on it. Well, why do they win on it? Because in off-year elections now, I heard somebody, I think his name was Ben Dominic on Kilmeade, saying this very thing. I believe the same thing. I was like, oh, good, I'm hearing somebody else say it. Republicans have now switched with Democrats of being the party of the working class. The working class typically doesn't show up to vote as much. They just don't. Your average person used to be a Democrat, and Republicans were like the elitist class. That's completely shifted in the last 10 years. So now if Republicans are the working class voters, they don't show up in off-year elections. Remember how Republicans used to really do well in midterms, but not as well in presidential elections? That's flipping right now. So you go, well, that's pretty good news for Trump then. Hey, I mean, it's not a guarantee, obviously. It's not as if Republicans used to only win in midterms and never win presidential elections. It's just shifting that way. So that's why you're seeing this happen. Also, abortion is a winning issue for Democrats right now. Why is that happening? Well, because anytime there's big social change, big change, there's always a backlash against it. Always. Take Obamacare, for example. That was a huge, big social change. And Republicans ran on repealing it for like 10 years. And they won on that because voters went, yeah, I don't like all this change. That's what's happening with Roe versus Wade. It was sudden. It was dramatic. And voters are going, I'm afraid of change. I don't like change. And especially in midterm years. Will that affect 2024? Yes, but not as much. Because Republicans are going to be showing up more because of the working class thing in a presidential year. Now, to Biden. So I'm predicting that not only will it be Trump, but he will actually win. Part of the reason that he'll win is because the reverse effect is happening with Biden right now. They've been trying to get him out of the race. Big names, David Axelrod and many others are going, 75% of Democrat voters go, maybe he shouldn't be the nominee. So they're trying to push him out. But he's not going to because he's the president right now. He can say, I'm not going to get out of the race. And the machine is not going to turn on him. They're trying to subtly. You got Gavin Newsom out there trying to subtly turn on him. But they're not going to fully do it because they know that that would be painful to go through and bad for the party and bad for 2024. So if Biden decides he's going to run, he's going to run. And I think he's decided he's going to run. He may not know why. He may not know what the White House is, but he knows that he's in it. And he knows he wants to stay in it. This election that just happened on Tuesday solidifies that. Why? Because of abortion. Now you got the machine going, you know what? Abortion's a winning issue for us, Democrats. We're going to run on abortion, and it doesn't even matter who the candidate is. We're going to stick with Biden. If it is him, great. We're going to run on abortion regardless. And they're going to do it, and they're going to lose because they're sacrificing every single other issue that Republicans, actually not even Republicans, Americans care about right now. You're talking about the border. You're talking about crime. You're talking about mainly the economy. You are also talking about international issues at this point that people are afraid of. They are losing on every single issue. This election Tuesday was much more local. In 2024, that's going to be national. Same people who probably flipped and voted for abortion in Ohio are going to flip and vote for Republicans in 2024. You're going to see a lot of that. All right, I've gone long to start this segment. I'm going to come back to this, probably replay this whole thing at the end of the show. So if you're podcasting it, sorry, I'm going to replay it. But I know that you're not listening to the entire thing if you're just listening over the air. So we are going to replay this thing at the end of the show. A lot more analysis. Stick around. This is Wiggins America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the things I did not mention in that whole last segment of giving you predictions, which I'm going to do again at the end of the show. I don't mean to intend that I'm going to replay that same segment. I'm going to replay the part where I make the predictions and talk about it again and probably make some more predictions. But one of them that I failed to give that was on my list just because I was going long was for the Senate. So here it is. The Senate will most likely be Republican, but not by a lot. I'm going to guess maybe one or two seats most. So it will be a Republican majority, but it'll be narrow. And that's the way it's always going to be right now. It's not going to switch unless there's some sort of dramatic transformation to the electorate. We're going to have narrow majorities constantly. This one will be a Republican one. As for the House, I haven't really looked at it as much. But if I had to just give you my off-the-cuff guess right now, I would say that it would also be a narrow Republican majority still. Although I'm not quite sure about that. I haven't looked into it as much, and it's harder to do that because there's 435 races or whatever across the country, and they're harder to predict. So that's that. Now I'm on record for that, and I just want to tell you that we have a special guest coming in at the end of the show. Confirm this now. The man who never stops. You know, getting a morning show host on a weekend show is kind of a big deal. So I'm going to tout it pretty heavily within this hour. Mark Cox coming up at the end of this hour, making a stop by the Wiggins America. So stick around for that. Yeah, I'm coming in with Pink Floyd here on purpose, and this song in particular on purpose. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you've heard me talking about my favorite bands, two of which are the Beatles and Pink Floyd. We've had some Beatles news this last couple weeks. That's been fun. Pink Floyd, however, is not putting out a whole lot of new music, and the music that they do put out without Roger Waters is not that great. Everything after the Final Cut, which was released in 1982, I think, has been pretty average. That song, hey, that one's pretty good. I give them that. That's the best song that they did without Roger Waters. And they have maybe two or three others that I find to be enjoyable. But other than that, the era that we all know of Pink Floyd was led by Mr. Roger Waters. Now, whenever his name is trending in the news, I take notice because he is one of those guys who, well, not only am I a fan of his music, but he says things that you never really know where he's going to land. You know, he's one of those kind of, I hesitate to compare it to Bill Maher, because Bill Maher seems like he's got a little bit more logic to the positions that he takes, even if I disagree with him. Whereas Roger Waters is so all over the board that I do kind of take notice just because I don't know what he's going to say, but I don't really feel like he has strong reasons for a lot of it. Case in point is the clip I'm about to play. This has been making the rounds this week. Glenn Greenwald, you know that name? He is a journalist who had been a pretty hard left kind of guy. And in the last, I'd say Trump era, but even more recently than that, he's been one of those who's drifted much, much more to the center. And so people like Roger Waters feel comfortable talking to him because he's really kind of like the Barry Weisses of the world. They seem to be journalists. They come at things with a pretty blank slate and say, I'm going to ask you questions, tell me what you think. And then they might offer their opinions, but they're not like part of the media landscape of the right or the left. Does that make sense? So Glenn Greenwald was able to sit down with Roger Waters, asked him some very poignant questions about Israel. And let me tell you, Roger Waters, he misses the mark hard on Israel all the time. So prepare yourself.
There is, unseen by most, an underworld, a place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
Well, we don't know what they did do, but was it justified for them to resist the occupation? Yeah. But it's what you said, it's the Geneva Conventions. They're absolutely legally and morally bound to resist the occupation since 1967. It's an obligation.
But are there limits on the way in which they can resist?
As I said in the statement that I put out after it, I said, if war crimes were committed, I condemn them.
Do you think there's been evidence that's emerged that suggests they committed those?
There may have been.
There may be evidence to suggest that Hamas committed war crimes. I mean, he's talking about the Geneva Conventions and stuff. I mean, that's why it's our tale of the dark side this week, is because that's crazy. I don't think I need to tell you why that's crazy too much, but just the contradiction inherent in what he's saying within itself, it doesn't even make sense. He's saying, well, I don't even believe that all the stuff that Israel is saying happened to them is true, which is already nuts. We'll get into that in a second because there's another clip. But not only is it all not true, but also Hamas has the right, Palestinians have the right to do those things. So they didn't do them, but they can. And when I see that they have the right, and in fact, the obligation to do that. That's what he said. Here's the second clip where he goes in a little bit harder on that he doesn't really believe that these things really happened or that they weren't as bad as that they appeared to be.
But Haaretz have finally come out with figures of how many people were actually killed and who they were.
On that day, uh-huh.
On that day, yeah. And so probably the first 400 were Israeli military personnel. Who are? That is not a war crime.
No, but what about targeting civilians or abducting them?
No, of course not.
So it's okay because the first 400 were just Israeli military personnel, according to reports that he says come from the Arab reports. Because he says, I don't trust Israeli reports, so I'm only trusting Arab reports, which are apparently infallible. Which, a little bit of a tangent here, but have you seen some of the false footage coming out? And this is war. You're going to get false footage from all kinds of sides, don't get me wrong. We've seen that in Russia and Ukraine. We've seen that We've seen that in World War II. I mean, you have propaganda videos that come out that try to gin up emotion. Some of them are false. But there are provable ones that I've seen. And I'm not Trey Yinkst, Fox News, on the ground in Israel reporting. These are videos that you can see on Twitter because Hamas has attempted to record all of their slaughtering. And they've been censored a lot on social media. So, Roger Waters, I suggest you go check out the footage that Hamas themselves put out of them slaughtering people if you're not sure about it. But they also have put out a lot of propaganda videos once the war turned on them that you can see for yourself. It's out there. Go look it up. Hamas videos where they'll show a bunch of what they say are dead bodies and they'll have people crying around them. And then they think the camera's off and somebody's foot's moving and they're starting to stand up. You know, I mean, it's like these are fake videos. They're fake. Some of them are real and some of them are not, but it's really hard to know. So for Roger Waters to come in and say, well, I believe the Arab reports, but not the Israeli reports. Well, why don't you look at everything if you're going to look with a skeptical eye, look at everything with a skeptical eye. Don't just trust that one side is giving you the truth. I will say that when I trust Israeli sources, it's about as best the best vetting I can do here from St. Louis, Missouri, because they're going through our government a lot of times, which, again, I don't know whether you trust them, but that's the best we got right now. And consider that when journalists go to the Middle East, pretty much across the board, once in a while they might go to Syria or Lebanon. Once in a while they might go to Egypt, if you consider that Middle East. But the vast majority of the time, there's a conflict that breaks out somewhere in the Middle East. Where do they go? They go to Israel, because Israel allows journalism. No, none of these other countries really allow journalism, and the more controlled they are, the less they allow you to roam free. That's because they, these other nations, want to control the message more. Israel, I'm not saying they've never manipulated media before. Everybody's done this. The United States does this. But they allow journalists to come into their country and freely roam about, and they might have to go to certain areas for protection, but for the most part, you're free to do citizen journalism in Israel. You are not in most Middle Eastern countries. So which one do you trust? Roger Waters has really missed the mark here. And this should be no surprise. If you don't care about Roger Waters and Pink Floyd, I get it. I think it's one of those things I take notice of because I'm just a huge fan of Pink Floyd. And when I see this, I go, oh, what's he saying? Oh, or oh, depends on the day. And this was a, oh, it's just amazing to me that these people, and I you know, he seems like a smart enough guy that you wouldn't question some of the things you're being told by certain media. Like, why trust one side over the other? And then also to downplay the October 7th massacre and say, well, because this isn't even the whole clip. I cut this up trying to give you full context. I don't like taking things out of context. But pretty much what he's saying throughout this entire interview is, well, you know, I don't support war crimes, but, you know, as long as it's according to the Geneva Conventions, it's okay. And a lot of that stuff on October 7th was. I'm sorry. Sorry, that's not the correct position, sir. And that is why we go out once again with the best Pink Floyd song that doesn't have Roger Waters. He had left the band by this point. We'll be right back. We got to talking, and I said, Mark, then we just have to go do a segment on this. So thanks for coming in.
Oh, glad to be here. Are you kidding me?
This is only the second time I've been able to grip you away from the clutches of weekdays. But let me ask you the question first, because I got a couple. The question we were talking about in the office was, do you think Joe Biden's going to be the nominee? And I just said in the last segment that I've been saying that he's going to be the nominee for the whole time. But you're the one that I thought maybe you've been saying that too, but you said you haven't. You've wavered on it.
No, I kind of thought that because of how half-hearted they've been campaigning, that he would not be the nominee. But we're reaching a critical point here where, despite the fact that even some members of the mainstream media are now chiming in on this, David Axelrod this past week famously said he needs to seriously look at this and see if this is where he wants to be. I don't get the impression that there's internal pressure on him, though. And at some point, they've got to get names on ballots in all 50 states. They can't screw around with this much longer. If they're going to get rid of Joe Biden, if it's not going to be him, they're going to have to make that decision before the first of the year.
So some people, I think Annie is one of them. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think she said this, that she's saying, well, it doesn't even have to be that. She's expecting that they might go through the process, and then all of a sudden, before the actual nomination happens, he drops out, and then they can pick somebody very random because they've already been through the process. Now, I don't know all the legality of that, but when she talks about it, she acts as if she does. So I don't know if they can actually, like, right before the convention, nominate somebody else because the person with all the votes has now dropped out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that there's, I don't know if there's precedent for it, but I imagine it could happen. That's why the conventions exist. But man, that's a short time period.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these folks are campaigning and they've sewn this thing up long before you get to the convention.
My case has constantly been that Joe Biden wants to run. You can't tell him he's not going to if he's going to do it. You know what I mean? If he were not the president of the United States, you could tell him that. But he is the sitting president.
And that might be the problem, Ryan. I mean, it very well could be. That could be the problem. He, in his limited awareness, of course, enjoys being president. His wife enjoys the role of being first lady, clearly, based on the different pieces the different pieces of drapery she wears in her clothing on occasion. I think they're going to have to take it away from him if it's not going to be him.
I do too. Yeah.
And I don't know who's got the guts in the Democratic Party to stand up and do that. I think there are some people with their own personal goals, like Gavin Newsom, who want that to happen. Maybe even Kamala Harris, quietly, when she's having dinner with her husband, wants that to happen. But I don't think anybody's going to come out and say it publicly.
Yeah, and my fear is, because this week we saw Jill Biden, you mentioned Jill Biden, that she apparently, and these are reports, that she's mad at the machine, the DNC machine, for not campaigning better for him. So clearly she, and by association, he, still intend to run. I mean, that's what that said to me. And it also says what we've been saying is that the whispers are, well, how do we kind of get this guy out of there? My fear, though, is, as we transition to this other topic that I want to talk about with you, my fear is that he will end up being the nominee and I won't get any credit for it.
Well, that's certainly important. At least we have it here on tape,
that's
right?
That's exactly right.
It's recorded, although we don't use tape anymore. It is digitally recorded here.
Yeah.
That you said it first.
Yes, and it will be time-stamped once it goes in the podcast. It's all for the record. We've got it. But the issue I really wanted to discuss with you, now I've played this already on this show, but I'm going to play it again at the end of the show. I realize most people, unless you're podcasting it, you're not listening for 2 hours. So I wanted to do this a couple times. I played a recording of myself on Tuesday. I came into this studio and I recorded myself giving predictions for the elections for the big four. And I went 4 for 4. So, of course, I want to play that back as many times as I can.
All right.
So the big elections being the Virginia House, the Virginia Senate, Kentucky governor, and Ohio abortion. Those are the four that I went on record predicting and got them all right. I wasn't happy that I got them right because they all went the way that I hoped they wouldn't.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I'm coming in with Pink Floyd here on purpose, and this song in particular on purpose. If you listen to this show for any amount of time, you've heard me talking about my favorite bands, two of which are the Beatles and Pink Floyd. We've had some Beatles news this last couple weeks. That's been fun. Pink Floyd, however, is not putting out a whole lot of new music, and the music that they do put out without Roger Waters is not that great. Everything after the Final Cut, which was released in 1982, I think, has been pretty average. That song, hey, that one's pretty good. I give them that. That's the best song that they did without Roger Waters. And they have maybe two or three others that I find to be enjoyable. But other than that, the era that we all know of Pink Floyd was led by Mr. Roger Waters. Now, whenever his name is trending in the news, I take notice because he is one of those guys who, well, not only am I a fan of his music, but he says things that you never really know where he's going to land. You know, he's one of those kind of, I hesitate to compare him to Bill Maher, because Bill Maher seems like he's got a little bit more logic to the positions that he takes, even if I disagree with him. Whereas Roger Waters is so all over the board that I do kind of take notice just because I don't know what he's going to say, but I don't really feel like he has strong reasons for a lot of it. Case in point is the clip I'm about to play. This has been making the rounds this week. Glenn Greenwald, you know that name? He is a journalist who had been a pretty hard left kind of guy. And in the last, I'd say Trump era, but even more recently than that, he's been one of those who's drifted much, much more to the center. And so people like Roger Waters feel comfortable talking to him because he's really kind of like the Barry Weisses of the world. They seem to be journalists. They come at things with a pretty blank slate and say, I'm going to ask you questions, tell me what you think. And then they might offer their opinions, but they're not like part of the media landscape of the right or the left. Does that make sense? So Glenn Greenwald was able to sit down with Roger Waters, asked him some very poignant questions about Israel. And let me tell you, Roger Waters, he misses the mark hard on Israel all the time, so prepare yourself.
There is, unseen by most, an underworld. A place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
We don't know what they did do, but was it justified for them to resist the occupation? Yeah. But it's what you said, it's the Geneva Conventions. They are absolutely legally and morally bound to resist the occupation since 1967. It's an obligation.
But are there limits on the way in which they can resist?
As I said in the statement that I put out after it, I said, if war crimes were committed, I condemn them.
Do you think there's been evidence that's emerged that suggests they committed those?
There may have been.
There may be evidence to suggest that Hamas committed war crimes. I mean, he's talking about the Geneva Conventions and stuff. I mean, that's why it's our tale of the dark side this week, is because that's crazy. I don't think I need to tell you why that's crazy too much, but just the contradiction inherent in what he's saying within itself it doesn't even make sense. He's saying, well, I don't even believe that all the stuff that Israel is saying happened to them is true, which is already nuts. We'll get into that in a second because there's another clip. But not only is it all not true, but also Hamas has the right, Palestinians have the right to do those things. So they didn't do them, but they can. And when I see that they have the right. And in fact, the obligation to do that. That's what he said. Here's the second clip where he goes in a little bit harder on that he doesn't really believe that these things really happened or that they weren't as bad as that they appeared to be.
But Haaretz have finally come out with figures of how many people were actually killed and who they were.
On that day, uh-huh.
On that day, yeah. And so probably the first 400 were Israeli military personnel. Who are? That is not a war crime.
No, but what about targeting civilians or abducting them?
No, of course not.
So it's okay because the first 400 were just Israeli military personnel, according to reports that he says come from the Arab reports. Because he says, I don't trust Israeli reports, so I'm only trusting Arab reports, which are apparently infallible. Which, a little bit of a tangent here, but have you seen some of the false footage coming out? And this is war. You're going to get false footage from all kinds of sides, don't get me wrong. We've seen that in Russia and Ukraine. We've seen that in World War II. I mean, you have propaganda videos that come out that try to gin up emotion. Some of them are false. But there are provable ones that I've seen, and I'm not Trey Yingst, Fox News, on the ground in Israel reporting. These are videos that you can see on Twitter because Hamas has attempted to record all of their slaughtering, and they've been censored a lot on social media. So, Roger Waters, I suggest you go check out the footage that Hamas themselves put out of them slaughtering people if you're not sure about it. But they also have put out a lot of propaganda videos once the war turned on them that you can see for yourself. It's out there. Go look it up. Hamas videos where they'll show a bunch of what they say are dead bodies and they'll have people crying around them. And then they think the camera's off and somebody's foot's moving and they're starting to stand up. You know, I mean, it's like these are fake videos. They're fake. Some of them are real and some of them are not, but it's really hard to know. So for Roger Waters to come in and say, well, I believe the Arab reports, but not the Israeli reports. Well, why don't you look at everything if you're going to look with a skeptical eye, look at everything with a skeptical eye. Don't just trust that one side is giving you the truth. I will say that when I trust Israeli sources, it's about as best, the best vetting I can do here from St. Louis, Missouri, because they're going through our government a lot of times, which, again, I don't know whether you trust them, but that's the best we got right now. And consider that when journalists go to the Middle East, pretty much across the board, once in a while they might go to Syria or Lebanon. Once in a while they might go to Egypt, if you consider that Middle East. But the vast majority of the time, there's a conflict that breaks out somewhere in the Middle East. Where do they go? They go to Israel, because Israel allows journalism. No, none of these other countries really allow journalism, and the more controlled they are, the less they allow you to roam free. That's because these other nations, want to control the message more. Israel, I'm not saying they've never manipulated media before. Everybody's done this. The United States does this. But they allow journalists to come into their country and freely roam about, and they might have to go to certain areas for protection, but for the most part, you're free to do citizen journalism in Israel. You are not in most Middle Eastern countries. So which one do you trust? Roger Waters has really missed the mark here. And this should be no surprise. If you don't care about Roger Waters and Pink Floyd, I get it. I think it's one of those things I take notice of because I'm just a huge fan of Pink Floyd. And when I see this, I go, oh, what's he saying? Oh, or oh, depends on the day. And this was a, oh, it's just amazing to me that these people, and I you know, he seems like a smart enough guy that you wouldn't question some of the things you're being told by certain media. Like, why trust one side over the other? And then also to downplay the October 7th massacre and say, well, because this isn't even the whole clip. I cut this up trying to give you full context. I don't like taking things out of context. But pretty much what he's saying throughout this entire interview is, well, you know, I don't support war crimes, but, you know, as long as it's according to the Geneva Conventions, it's okay. And a lot of that stuff on October 7th was. I'm sorry. Sorry, that's not the correct position, sir. And that is why we go out once again with the best Pink Floyd song that doesn't have Roger Waters. He had left the band by this point. We'll be right back. We got to talking, and I said, Mark, then we just have to go do a segment on this. So thanks for coming in.
Oh, glad to be here. Are you kidding me?
This is only the second time I've been able to grip you away from the clutches of weekdays. But let me ask you the question first, because I got a couple. The question we were talking about in the office was, do you think Joe Biden's going to be the nominee? And I just said in the last segment that I've been saying that he's going to be the nominee for the whole time. But you're the one that I thought maybe you've been saying that too, but you said you haven't. You've wavered on it.
No, I kind of thought that because of how half-hearted they've been campaigning, that he would not be the nominee. But we're reaching a critical point here where, despite the fact that even some members of the mainstream media are now chiming in on this, David Axelrod this past week famously said he needs to seriously look at this and see if this is where he wants to be. I don't get the impression that there's internal pressure on him, though. And at some point, they've got to get names on ballots in all 50 states. They can't screw around with this much longer. If they're going to get rid of Joe Biden, if it's not going to be him, they're going to have to make that decision before the first of the year.
So some people, I think Annie is one of them. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think she said this, that she's saying, well, it doesn't even have to be that. She's expecting that they might go through the process, and then all of a sudden, before the actual nomination happens, he drops out, and then they can pick somebody very random because they've already been through the process. Now, I don't know all the legality of that, but when she talks about it, she acts as if she does. So I don't know if they can actually, like, right before the convention, nominate somebody else because the person with all the votes has now dropped out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that I don't know if there's precedent for it, but I imagine it could happen. That's why the conventions exist. But, man, that's a short time period.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these folks are campaigning, and they've sewn this thing up long before you get to the convention.
My case has constantly been that Joe Biden wants to run. You can't tell him he's not going to if he's going to do it. You know what I mean? If he were not the president of the United States, you could tell him that. But he is the sitting president,
and that might be the problem, Ryan. I mean, it very well could be. That could be the problem. He, in his limited awareness, of course, enjoys being president. His wife enjoys the role of being first lady, clearly, based on the different pieces the different pieces of drapery she wears in her clothing on occasion. I think they're going to have to take it away from him if it's not going to be him.
I do too. Yeah.
And I don't know who's got the guts in the Democratic Party to stand up and do that. I think there are some people with their own personal goals, like Gavin Newsom, who want that to happen. Maybe even Kamala Harris, quietly, when she's having dinner with her husband, wants that to happen. But I don't think anybody's going to come out and say it publicly.
Yeah, and my fear is, because this week we saw Jill Biden, you mentioned Jill Biden, that she apparently, and these are reports, that she's mad at the machine, the DNC machine, for not campaigning better for him. So clearly she, and by association, he, still intend to run. I mean, that's what that said to me. And it also says what we've been saying is that the whispers are, well, how do we kind of get this guy out of there? My fear, though, is, as we transition to this other topic that I want to talk about with you, my fear is that he will end up being the nominee and I won't get any credit for it.
Well, that's certainly important. At least we have it here on tape,
that's
right?
That's exactly right.
It's recorded, although we don't use tape anymore. It is digitally recorded here.
Yeah.
that you said it first.
Yes, and it will be time-stamped once it goes in the podcast. It's all for the record. We've got it. But the issue I really wanted to discuss with you, now I've played this already on this show, but I'm going to play it again at the end of the show. I realize most people, unless you're podcasting it, you're not listening for 2 hours. So I wanted to do this a couple times. I played a recording of myself on Tuesday. I came into this studio and I recorded myself giving predictions for the elections for the big four. And I went 4 for 4. So, of course, I want to play that back as many times as I can.
All right.
So the big elections being the Virginia House, the Virginia Senate, Kentucky governor, and Ohio abortion. Those are the four that I went on record predicting and got them all right. I wasn't happy that I got them right because they all went the way that I hoped they wouldn't, but I did predict those. My question for you is, are these elections, these kind of weird off-year random elections, are they a bellwether for 2024? That's what everybody wants to know.
Yeah. The abortion issue is certainly. The Virginia issue, no, I don't think so. Virginia has been pretty predictably purple for a while now because it's dominated by people that live in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. They're part of the bureaucracy. They're part of the socio-military industrial complex. They're part of that system. I'm not surprised at all. The only one you probably missed was the porn star who was running in the Virginia House.
I didn't get that specific.
And she only lost by 1,000 votes.
You know what? I was looking at that yesterday or the day before, and I couldn't believe how close that was.
Despite the fact that she's running on a sort of a family values platform as a Democrat,
yes,
she's caught on tape having sex with her husband and doing things for money.
For money.
All of this stuff.
Tell me what you
want to see. Came within 1,000 votes of getting elected to the House in Virginia.
So, doesn't that just go to show you that we're in a time now where the person, I'm not going to say is inconsequential because they clearly are consequential, but what they stand for really is all people care about. So you can say, this is what I stand for, not really do it. And as long as you can convince people that you actually do stand for that, nobody really cares about what you're doing because the other side is so evil, the other side is so wrong, that I'll actually not even care about you personally. I mean, we've kind of done that with Trump. I'm not going to say we haven't.
Right.
Trump is not a moral figure. But he's not campaigning that he is. I'll give him credit that. He stands for conservative values now, and that's changed based on what he has said that they are, for sure.
Yeah.
But we're in an era where we're just so divided that stuff doesn't even matter.
Well, back to your original question.
Yeah.
The abortion issue definitely is going to be in play a year from now. There's no doubt about it. The Democrats want to take a huge victory. I mean, they did win this, but they poured millions of dollars into it. What we saw in Ohio was, we're going to see a replay of that in Missouri. We didn't get initiative petition reform taken care of last year like we should have. They only have to get a limited number of signatures. They only have to get 50.1% to pass this stupid thing and put in the Missouri Constitution the right to kill babies. That's what they're trying to do. I think they've got a good shot of success here, too. Where I'd probably differ with Annie, I heard her on the air this week about this a little bit, is that the answer for Republicans is to abandon. Now, she didn't say abandon. My words, not hers. That what Republicans need to do is change their approach when it comes to abortion and prove that they are empathetic and they understand what these women are going through and that's how we're going to win people over, by showing our hearts and when we don't think every single person out there is evil. I was sickened by what I saw in Ohio. I was sickened by the ads talking about this being healthcare somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not healthcare for the children whose lives are being taken.
Right.
I think we just haven't, as conservatives, done a good job talking to the American people about this. To me the pro-abortion, they'll call it pro-choice, the only choice is death for the infant. It's the most selfish attitude in the world, that my personal wants and and pleasure is more important than the consequences of what I've created. And I should be able to snuff that out if I want to. So selfish. And it pains me to, because here's what's going to happen in Missouri, Ryan, and tell me if I'm going on too long here. Millions of dollars from outside of Missouri will be pumped into this Missouri election, where they will try to sell this as some sort of reproductive health care, and it's good and it's positive and all this stuff. And there will not be, if it is, it'll be weak, any organized campaign to counter that, right?
I do believe that that's true. I mean, that's what we've seen in Kansas. That's what we've seen now in Ohio. That's what we've seen across the country, is that the pro-life movement is passionate and is not well-funded.
Right.
It's a lot of volunteers, a lot of people doing a lot, and a lot of people very, very strongly invested in it. But there's not a lot of money. There's not that corporate money. And that is a huge problem. And I think that you're right. I think it has to be, while I do agree that the messaging needs to be better, and because the messaging right now, part of it is the money. We don't have the messaging out there because we don't have the money. That it does have to be an approach that says, look, this isn't what it's been told to you. This is about babies' lives, and it's about women's lives. I mean, those messages do need to be there. But it does also need to have a political solution, too. I think you kind of have to do it all at the same time. And this thing about Missouri, I didn't expect to go there with you, but that does worry me, because of the way that our amendment situation is set up. I should say, because I live in Illinois. was that just, I mean, we got like a minute left here, but was that just a complete failure of our Republican congressman to get that changed before this happened?
Believe it or not, and here's the truth of it, the biggest group lobbying against initiative petition reform, and I don't know why, is the Missouri Realtors. The Missouri Realtors Association just donated $100,000 to a lobbying group to lobby against initiative petition reform. That happened this week.
And you don't know why.
I don't know why. I'm going to get to the bottom of it on my show.
Okay.
I'm working on that for this coming week. I got to figure out why. The chief lobbyist for that organization has been the key person in Jefferson City blocking initiative petition reform. And I don't understand it. I don't know what the realtor's issue would be that they're so worried about. Mm-hmm. A 57-58% vote required to amend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know what they, is they, your freedom.
They've got to have something, though.
There's got to be something going on there. So yeah, it's a failure. They had several attempts to come at it from last year, and all we got were weak excuses as to why they didn't get it done.
Well, thanks for the update. Yeah. Mr. 7 days a week, appreciate your time coming in on Wiggins America.
Somebody's got to do it, Ryan, but any opportunity to be on Wiggins America, I'm going to jump at that. You know that.
Thanks. All right, we're out of time for this hour, but we'll be right back with more with Old Roy and the others here on Wiggins America.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We'll be right back. We got to talking, and I said, Mark, then we just have to go do a segment on this. So thanks for coming in.
Oh, glad to be here. You kidding me?
Honor, Ryan. This is only the second time I've been able to grip you away from the clutches of weekdays. But let me ask you the question first, because I got a couple. The question we were talking about in the office was, do you think Joe Biden's going to be the nominee? And I just said in the last segment that I've been saying that he's going to be the nominee for the whole time. But you're the one that I thought maybe you've been saying that too, but you said you haven't. You've wavered on it.
No, I kind of thought that because of how half-hearted they've been campaigning, that he would not be the nominee. But we're reaching a critical point here where, despite the fact that even some members of the mainstream media are now chiming in on this, David Axelrod this past week famously said he needs to seriously look at this and see if this is where he wants to be. I don't get the impression that there's internal pressure on him, though. And at some point, they've got to get names on ballots in all 50 states. They can't screw around with this much longer. If they're going to get rid of Joe Biden, if it's not going to be him, they're going to have to make that decision before the first of the year.
So some people, I think Annie is one of them, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think she said this, that she's saying, Well, it doesn't even have to be that. She's expecting that they might go through the process, and then all of a sudden, before the actual nomination happens, he drops out, and then they can pick somebody very random because they've already been through the process. Now, I don't know all the legality of that, but when she talks about it, she acts as if she does. So I don't know if they can actually, like, right before the convention, nominate somebody else because the person with all the votes has now dropped out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that there's, I don't know if there's precedent for it, but I imagine it could happen. That's why the conventions exist. But man, that's a short time period.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these folks are campaigning and they've sewn this thing up long before you get to the convention.
My case has constantly been that Joe Biden wants to run. You can't tell him he's not going to if he's going to do it. You know what I mean? If he were not the president of the United States, you could tell him that. But he is the sitting president.
And that might be the problem, Ryan. I mean, it very well could be. That could be the problem. He, in his limited awareness, of course, enjoys being president. His wife enjoys the role of being first lady, clearly, based on the different pieces the different pieces of drapery she wears in her clothing on occasion. I think they're going to have to take it away from him if it's not going to be him.
I do too. Yeah.
And I don't know who's got the guts in the Democratic Party to stand up and do that. I think there are some people with their own personal goals, like Gavin Newsom, who want that to happen. Maybe even Kamala Harris, quietly, when she's having dinner with her husband, wants that to happen. But I don't think anybody's going to come out and say it publicly.
Yeah, and my fear is, because this week we saw Jill Biden, you mentioned Jill Biden, that she apparently, and these are reports, that she's mad at the machine, the DNC machine, for not campaigning better for him. So clearly she, and by association, he, still intend to run. I mean, that's what that said to me. And it also says what we've been saying is that the whispers are, well, how do we kind of get this guy out of there? My fear, though, is, as we transition to this other topic that I want to talk about with you, my fear is that he will end up being the nominee and I won't get any credit for it.
Well, that's certainly important. At least we have it here on tape,
that's
right?
That's exactly right.
It's recorded, although we don't use tape anymore. It is digitally recorded here.
Yeah.
That you said it first.
Yes, and it will be time stamped once it goes in the podcast. It's all for the record. We've got it. But the issue I really wanted to discuss with you, now I've played this already on this show, but I'm going to play it again at the end of the show. I realize most people, unless you're podcasting it, you're not listening for 2 hours. So I wanted to do this a couple times. I played a recording of myself on Tuesday. I came into this studio and I recorded myself giving predictions for the elections for the big four. And I went 4 for 4. So, of course, I want to play that back as many times as I can.
All right.
So the big elections being the Virginia House, the Virginia Senate, Kentucky governor, and Ohio abortion. Those are the four that I went on record predicting and got them all right. I wasn't happy that I got them right because they all went the way that I hoped they wouldn't. But I did predict those. My question for you is, are these elections, these kind of weird off-year random elections, are they a bellwether for 2024? That's what everybody wants to know.
Yeah. The abortion issue is certainly. The Virginia issue, no, I don't think so. Virginia has been pretty predictably purple for a while now because it's dominated by people that live in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. They're part of the bureaucracy. They're part of the socio-military industrial complex. They're part of that system. I'm not surprised at all. The only one you probably missed was the porn star who was running in the Virginia House.
I didn't get that specific.
And she only lost by 1,000 votes.
You know what? I was looking at that yesterday or the day before, and I couldn't believe how close that was.
Despite the fact that she's running on a sort of a family values platform as a Democrat.
Yes.
She's caught on tape having sex with her husband and doing things for money.
For money.
All of this stuff.
Tell me what
still
you
came
see.
Within 1,000 votes of getting elected to the House in Virginia.
So, doesn't that just go to show you that we're in a time now where the person I'm not going to say is inconsequential, because they clearly are consequential, but what they stand for really is all people care about. So you can say, this is what I stand for, not really do it, and as long as you can convince people that you actually do stand for that, nobody really cares about what you're doing, because the other side is so evil, the other side is so wrong, that I'll actually not even care about you personally. I mean, we've kind of done that with Trump. I'm not going to say we haven't.
Right.
Trump is not a moral figure. But he's not campaigning that he is. I'll give him credit that. He stands for conservative values now, and that's changed based on what he has said that they are, for sure.
Yeah.
But we're in an era where we're just so divided that stuff doesn't even matter.
Well, back to your original question.
Yeah.
The abortion issue definitely is going to be in play a year from now. There's no doubt about it. The Democrats want to take a huge victory. I mean, they did win this, but they poured millions of dollars into it. What we saw in Ohio was, we're going to see a replay of that in Missouri. We didn't get initiative petition reform taken care of last year like we should have. They're going to They only have to get a limited number of signatures. They only have to get 50.1% to pass this stupid thing and put in the Missouri Constitution the right to kill babies. That's what they're trying to do. I think they've got a good shot of success here, too. Where I probably differ with Annie, I heard her on the air this week about this a little bit, is that the answer for Republicans is to abandon. Now, she didn't say abandon. My words, not hers. That what Republicans need to do is change their approach when it comes to abortion and prove that they are empathetic and they understand what these women are going through and that's how we're going to win people over, by showing our hearts and when we don't think every single person out there is evil. I was sickened by what I saw in Ohio. I was sickened by the ads talking about this being health care somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not health care for the children whose lives are being taken.
Right.
I think we just haven't, as conservatives, done a good job talking to the American people about this. To me the pro-abortion, they'll call it pro-choice, the only choice is death for the infant. It's the most selfish attitude in the world, that my personal wants and pleasure is more important than the consequences of what I've created, and I should be able to snuff that out if I want to. So selfish, and it pains me to, because here's what's going to happen in Missouri, Ryan, and tell me if I'm going on too long here. Millions of dollars from outside of Missouri will be pumped into this Missouri election, where they will try to sell this as some sort of reproductive health care, and it's good and it's positive and all this stuff. And there will not be, if it is, it'll be weak, any organized campaign to counter that, right?
I do believe that that's true. I mean, that's what we've seen in Kansas. That's what we've seen now in Ohio. That's what we've seen across the country, is that the pro-life movement is passionate and is not well-funded.
Right.
It's a lot of volunteers, a lot of people doing a lot, and a lot of people very, very strongly invested in it. But there's not a lot of money. There's not that corporate money. And that is a huge problem. And I think that you're right. I think it has to be, while I do agree that the messaging needs to be better, because the messaging right now, part of it is the money. We don't have the messaging out there because we don't have the money. It does have to be an approach that says, look, this isn't what it's been told to you. This is about babies' lives, and it's about women's lives. I mean, those messages do need to be there. But it does also need to have a political solution, too. I think you kind of have to do it all at the same time. And this thing about Missouri, I didn't expect to go there with you, but that does worry me, because of the way that our amendment situation is set up. I should say, because I live in Illinois. was that just, I mean, we got like a minute left here, but was that just a complete failure of our Republican congressman to get that changed before this happened?
Believe it or not, and here's the truth of it, the biggest group lobbying against initiation petition reform, and I don't know why, is the Missouri Realtors. The Missouri Realtors Association just donated $100,000 to a lobbying group to lobby against initiation petition reform. That happened this week.
And you don't know why?
I don't know why. I'm going to get to the bottom of it on my show.
Okay.
I'm working on that for this coming week. I got to figure out why. The chief lobbyist for that organization has been the key person in Jefferson City blocking initiative petition reform. And I don't understand it. I don't know what the realtor's issue would be that they're so worried about a 57, 58% vote required to amend the Constitution. That I don't know what they're afraid of.
They've got to have something, though.
There's got to be something going on there. So, yeah, it's a failure. They had several attempts to come at it from last year, and all we got were weak excuses as to why they didn't get it done.
Well, thanks for the update. Yeah. Mr. 7 days a week, appreciate your time coming in on Wiggins America.
Somebody's got to do it, Ryan, but any opportunity to be on Wiggins America, I'm going to jump at that. You know that.
Thanks. All right, we're out of time for this hour, but we'll be right back with more with Old Roy and the others here on Wiggins America.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.